And Mr. Yancey, any time you are ready.
Thank you.
Would you care to reserve any time for rebuttal?
I would ask for 4 minutes.
Yes, sir.
And I'll just say this is my second appearance before a panel of the Court of Appeals, and I'm sure it won't be my last. But it's nice to see you all this morning.
Well, welcome back.
You're winning a lot of cases when you don't see us very often, though.
I'd like to believe that. I like the sound of that. And I'd like to begin first with regard to this matter. This is a matter where my client was convicted of two counts. One is involving abuse or neglect of an incapacitated adult. The other one was felony homicide, with the incapacitated adult being the felony that led to that conviction. And with regard to our appeal, it really centered around the abuse or neglect of an incapacitated adult, with the specific issue being neglect in the case, and that's what we were taking issue with. And as far as it's defined by that statute, it's the knowing and willful failure by a reasonable person to provide treatment, care, goods, or services which results in the injury to the health or endangers the safety of the incapacitated adult. And that's what essentially we're taking issue with in our appeal.
Whether or not your client bore responsibility, basically. Is that...
In not so much responsibility, but whether she actually committed the acts that would provide the neglect.
Who else could have done it?
In this case, I'll tell you that...
She said that she was the primary caretaker of this lady.
Yeah, and I will also mention that my client, unfortunately, is not the very sophisticated person. So I think when she was being asked by the detective, she's the only one that could provide care. So I think that's what led her to say, well, I guess...
But you would agree with me that the medical testimony was this wasn't an overnight neglect. It was long-standing over a long period of time for this lady to get down to 40-whatever pounds.
I would agree.
Because she'd been in the hospital in March of that year.
Yes.
And she was 105 pounds then, and your client told the powers that be at the hospital that was her baseline weight. 45 pounds at her death approximately 6 months later. So we're talking about 10 pounds a month she was shedding.
Well, I did want to address that, because when you look at the DePaul records from the emergency room visit, they didn't take a weight from the victim at that time. There was no weight taken.
Well, what we have in the record is 105 pounds, correct?
Yeah, what they were saying is my client at one point had an opinion that she may have weighed about 100 pounds. But the actual hospital records, they didn't take any
weight. But she sure didn't weigh 40-some pounds when she was in the hospital months ago.
And that's one of the issues that we had, because the hospital had marked her, quote-unquote, as being a skeleton, also had marked her as being, quote-unquote, emaciated at that time in March. We believe that she was very much about the same weight at that time that she was when she passed.
Do you think the hospital would have released her if she looked the way the autopsy pictures show that she looked?
And that's the issue that we have. They made those specific, and we quoted the skeleton and emaciated determination specifically, but we have no idea why they didn't keep her for treatment.
They told your client that... that she needed to get a doctor to treat this lady on a regular basis, correct?
My client was never told that. It was indicated in the paperwork. My client actually wasn't present when they did the evaluation of Ms. Curry. She appeared at the end when they had finished the evaluation. My client was only told that Ms. Curry was suffering from age-related issues, and they had given her a prescription for insomnia. That's all the information my client had.
Well, from a very practical standpoint, it's clear from those photographs, both in the condition in which this lady was found at her death, as well as on the autopsy table, that she had, and from the autopsy itself, she had no muscle mass whatsoever. She was essentially skin and bones, and that she could have borne no weight. I mean, she was bedridden. And clearly that wasn't the condition at the hospital. She was ambulatory in some form or fashion.
And then that's part of our argument. The same sort of description at her death is the same one they're using in March at the hospital.
But it's very clear that at the time of her death she couldn't bear weight, but she was ambulatory to a degree at the hospital. And your client had stated that, well, she was still having bowel movements, passing urine. Certainly the pictures bear out that the judge could have found that to be very incredible and self-serving testimony, because when you see the condition this woman was in, it is horrifying.
Yes.
And you wonder how any reasonable person, particularly one that identifies themselves as a primary caregiver, could have watched the deterioration while still administering medication to someone and thought that couldn't conclude that something was very, very deeply wrong and not sought the intervention of a medical professional.
Well, the problem my client and her family had is that Miss Curry was always someone who was very thin, and I believe she's only 4'9". But she's someone that was always very thin. So during the months from March until September when Miss Curry passed, they didn't really notice so much of her weight dropping off because she was already that thin.
That's hard to imagine.
I mean, I'm looking at some of the exhibits right now, and it is extremely hard to imagine.
Are you saying that she was not subject to abuse and neglect, or that your client didn't do it, or both?
We're saying that my client didn't neglect her. I don't think there was an issue at the trial about the abuse, but it centered around the neglect, and my client didn't willfully or knowingly neglect her.
Your client was her roommate, too, in addition to identifying herself as the primary caregiver. Is that right?
Yes, and we wanted to explain when Miss Valentine originally moved into 515 Ashlawn. The first year there, she was not Miss Curry's roommate. At that time, Miss Hernandez was a person who was managing that property, and Miss Hernandez was the one managing all of Miss Curry's affairs. She did all of her applications for Social Security, for Medicare, took her to appointments, managed everything for her. It wasn't until the second year that my client became roommates with Miss Curry.
Why does that matter?
And it was a couple of years after my client was roommates with Miss Curry that Miss Hernandez passed. And at that time, then Renee Collins, the landlord of the property, she stepped in and she started providing management. Except Miss Collins stayed away from anything involving caring for Miss Curry. And you could see from the transcript, we tried to call her as a witness, and she pled the fifth and didn't want to testify because she didn't want to incriminate herself.
And your client assumed the care of the lady who passed away then?
And my client was continuing as her roommate. No, from my client's standpoint, she was continuing as her roommate. They had become friends, and as it's been mentioned on the transcript, felt that she was even like a grandmother.
She provided the medication that was found in the victim's bloodstream at the time of her death. Isn't that right?
They found what would be the equivalent of cough medicine is what they were finding.
And Benadryl, I believe.
Yes.
Okay. And your client was the one who provided that to her.
She wasn't always providing it to her. It was in the household. And actually, sometimes Miss Curry would get sick and take it on her own. But everything wasn't given to Miss Curry by Miss Valentine.
It's certainly a reasonable inference, though, that the jury could have drawn that Miss Curry was not capable, having zero muscle mass, of self-administering any medication. Isn't that a pretty fair inference?
I could see how a jury could make that inference. We take issue with that. And when Miss Curry passed, as you may see from the transcript, my client was actually away in Washington, D.C. at her daughter's birthday party. My client wasn't there the last 2 days.
But the evidence is this couldn't have happened over 2 days.
Correct. But just with regard to the cough medicine.
So it's your position that your client lived with this lady and didn't notice that she had lost substantial weight to the point where she was skin and bones with no muscle mass, and she never picked up on that fact?
Well, with my client's understanding from their March visit to the hospital, is that she was suffering from old age issues. All they prescribed was insomnia medication.
But the hospital suggested that she be brought back or had received some regular medical care. Isn't that right?
Yet that was never told to Miss Valentine.
Well, she certainly received the discharge paperwork and instructions because she's the one that took her and retrieved her from the hospital.
Yeah, and she said she never received that information.
And that was up to the jury as to whether or not they believed that.
That would be an inference the jury would have to make themselves.
And I suppose it's not unimportant in this case that your client, while she didn't maintain an active license, had a nursing background and thus was familiar with the care of persons in need of care.
Yeah, the evidence was that 10 years prior to the death, she actually didn't recertify. She had heart issues and vascular issues in her legs. She didn't recertify. But she was 10 years ago a nursing assistant, yes.
It seems to me you don't even need training to see that somebody is being starved to death. Anybody could see that if you were looking. And if you're the caretaker.
In the course of the case, we also had Mr. Plant testify. He's the supervisor of the PAC program. In the PAC program, they had several clients at their property, and the workers for those clients were there every single day, like every single day. They never missed a day. And Ms. Valentine essentially was supervising the property, and if there were any sort of issues with these clients, she would contact the responsible workers. But Ms. Valentine was in contact with these workers on a daily basis, so they were always around, and that was one of the points that we had raised, is that those workers are mandatory reporters.
And the jury rejected that testimony, I'm assuming.
It appears by their verdict they did. But we had that sort of evidence, so we had people that were mandatory reporters there every single day.
The fact finder can reject any testimony that it wants to,
yes.
Which particularly if it's inconsistent with her physical condition.
That they have the right to make those inferences. In our position in this case is Ms. Collins, the landlord, she's the one that would have had all the identification, social security information.
You don't need identification to call 911.
Yeah, she could have called 911, that's true.
Apparently she didn't need identification when they took her to the hospital several months before that.
And that's how they ended up in the emergency room. There was no identification or any information. There was actually a discussion with Ms. Collins that led to that visit, but Ms. Collins didn't want to be involved in the visit.
And you would agree that regardless of whether or not she regretted the description, your client is stuck with her admission that she was the primary caregiver?
That was one of our contentions at trial. And as I said, she's not a very sophisticated person, so I think when the detective put it to her, are you the primary caretaker for her, she's probably thinking, well, there's nobody else, I'm her roommate, I'd try to help her out. And she probably figured that has to be her, it couldn't be anybody else.
And taking the evidence in the light most favorable to the Commonwealth, as we are required to do, that is an admission that stands on appeal, correct?
Yeah, that's one we have to contend with. That is one we have to contend with. But it's been our position with regard to the facts that she essentially has a roommate that had these medical issues. And from her perspective, she became very good friends with this roommate. And as we've had several witnesses that testified during the course of the trial, they were there around the property rather routinely as well. And they even helped out with providing food to the tenants and watching the property, especially when Ms. Valentine would have to leave for various reasons.
But doesn't the close relationship taken in conjunction with the admission that she's the primary caregiver, particularly when you look at the photographs of this individual at the time of her death, doesn't that hurt you rather than help you?
It does hurt. And that's why we had a
looking at someone like a grandmother and considering them to be a good friend, meanwhile they weigh 45 pounds at the time of their death, I don't think that helps the defendant.
And that's why we took an issue with regard to the weight. We had several witnesses that were seeing Ms. Curry as well, and they all testified that she was always
skinny. But those are all factual issues that were determined against your client at the jury trial, wasn't it?
Yes.
And it's not our job to reweigh the evidence.
Yes. But we were definitely taking issue with that as far as her weight. And at the time, what her weight was at death and what it was even leading up to that weeks and months before that, there are observations that it looked like she was losing weight, but nobody could see any sort of significant weight loss.
And am I correct that your client also admitted that she thought that Ms. Curry was about to pass?
She was indicating from her past experience caring for people who had passed that they tend to have a lot of similar things that happen, kind of being more antisocial, not wanting to eat as much, those sort of things. She was noticing that happening.
Yeah, well, again, I hate to harp on the photographs, but I'm at a loss to see how somebody in that physical condition could be social, could communicate, could care for herself in any way at all, much less a meaningful way.
Yes, and we think it's a legitimate question about what her weight was leading to her death.
Well, we got that from your client.
And she had an opinion at one point that she thought around.
And that's what we have in the record. We don't have anything to controvert that. So we've got the defendant who's accused of committing this crime that says that she believed that she weighed 105 pounds in March, and that was her baseline. And then in September, at the time of her death, she weighs 45 pounds.
Yes.
And what else do we have besides that?
We had the medical examiner, and it showed up when Ms. Curry passed.
And said that she had the lowest body mass index she's ever seen or ever recorded.
The one that showed up on the scene immediately upon the death indicated that she weighed 70 pounds. It wasn't until they did the autopsy that they determined that she weighed 45. It was initial medical exam that showed up immediately when the call came in about her passing that same day in September 2015.
We have dominated quite a bit of your time, so we will make sure you have a couple of minutes on rebuttal.
Yes, thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, Aaron Campbell on behalf of the Commonwealth. I'll just point out a few things in this case. The first thing is the defendant wants to kind of skirt the responsibility off to the landlord. I was pointing out that the statute says that a responsible person is any person who, by operation of law, or who has assumed such responsibility voluntarily or by contact or by in fact.
Well, she said that she was the sole caretaker.
So. I mean, by her words alone, she admits that she was the caretaker. She told the police that. She also represented herself out to be the caretaker when she took the victim to the hospital back in March. And she signed the paperwork as the caretaker. But also just by her actions. I mean, it wasn't just that she was feeding the victim in this case. She also changed her adult diapers. Just by her actions alone, there's no question that she is the caretaker and a responsible person under the statute. This is far beyond just simply a roommate. As for the central issue of this case was there evidence of neglect to sustain a verdict? And I would submit that there was ample evidence. I point out that I believe this case is really controlled by the Correll case from the Supreme Court of Virginia. We had a very similar set of circumstances in that case where the victim had died of severe dehydration and starvation. And what the Supreme Court did in that case is they looked at the victim's condition over and determined that this death occurred over a period of weeks and months, and that the primary caretaker in that case certainly neglected. The Supreme Court used the word clearly, had neglected to provide the necessary treatment. This case is almost directly on point, as the court's already talked about. The pictures in this case, as the court below said, are very telling. They're very hard to look at. This woman weighed 45 pounds. As the court said, she was
And this appellant looked at this lady every single day.
Every single day. They were roommates. She weighed 45 pounds at a time of her death. She represented that to the police, is on page 526 of the appendix, that back in March, about 6 months, she weighed about 105 pounds, and that was her baseline weight. As for the medical examiner that showed up, he said 70 pounds. That was an estimate. He didn't weigh her at that time. The autopsy showed that it was 45 pounds. You can see in the record how skinny she was. The lowest body mass index that the medical examiner had ever seen. Her bowels were bleeding for lack of food. Something that I don't think I pointed out in my brief, but going over the case, it's an unusual, but she had hair loss on the top of her head from the dehydration and starvation. But she also had hair growing on her arms, which the medical examiner explained that's what happens a lot of times. And
her eyeballs had collapsed as well.
And also her eyeballs had collapsed from the lack of fluid. And the medical examiner said, this is not something that occurs overnight or a few days. This is something that would occur weeks and probably most likely months. And this woman was, the victim, was taken care of by this defendant who said that she was aware that she was not eating that much, and she thought that she was going to pass, but she did nothing. I'd also point out a couple things that was brought up in the opposing counsel's argument. He talked about the PAC program. It's important to note that the victim in this case wasn't even a member of that program. She wasn't one of the clients, so I don't know if those healthcare workers actually even saw her when they came to visit the facility. One other thing, she was developing bed sores, so she was immobile at the time of her death. That's what the medical examiner testified to. So she would have been totally dependent on her caregiver for food and water and medicine. In conclusion, it's really hard to believe something like this, that another human being could see someone like this every single day and not do something. And we ask that the jury's verdict be affirmed.
Thank you. Thank you. Right, Mr. Yancey.
And I would just say, and not to repeat myself, but you know, just to reiterate, you know, that's one of the issues that we had about the weight, because I know you're talking about the baseline of 105 pounds in March. My client didn't weigh her either. That was just an opinion. We wish we actually had a weight by the hospital when they're making those observations.
But that was an issue for the fact finder.
True. And it could have been an amount of maybe 20 pounds between March and September that maybe she lost. Unfortunately, the hospital record didn't have her weight. I think that would have helped this case as well. And I understand what Your Honors are saying as far as the fact finder making inferences. But that was one of the issues that we did have about her size and her weight and losing weight and having all these people, not just my client, but others observing her and not seeing anything significant that led to like a 911 call. And I recognize what the pictures look like, and we just have these gaps that the trial fact has to fill. I understand that. But unfortunately, for March, we don't have the weight from the hospital. We had witnesses trying to fill that gap as far as saying that Ms. Curry was always thin, always a skinny person, I think only 4'9", always a very small person. I would submit that. I don't think there's anything else I would say. I would just be duplicating what I've said earlier.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Yancey. We'll come down and greet counsel, and then we'll